So as we listened, a ministry philosophy evolved, which was, we just call it national first thinking, is what is it they need? And once we did that, we found that we didn't need to be front and center. We needed to be very much behind the scenes. And when we were behind the scenes and they were the ones that were being championed, it was a game changer.
For 2,000 years, Christ has been extending his kingdom through ordinary, faithful people. Their blood, sweat, and tears are the seeds of the global church. The gospel is spreading across the world, saving sinners, renewing nations, and changing everything. But today, many in the modern church are weak, torn, comfortable. The book of Hebrews says we're surrounded by a great cloud of witnesses, watching us from heaven, spurring us on. The stories of these faithful Christ followers who've gone before us are what we need to wake up and return to our first love for Christ's mission. Let's learn from them.
On this week's episode of Cloud of Witnesses, we hear from missionary George Collins, who, alongside his wife Debbie, faithfully served in Bangladesh before founding GAP Ministries, which later became Live Global, an ABWE ministry. While working alongside national partners on the field, George recognized a vital need to better connect and equip national Christian leaders on the mission field with communication, encouragement, and the resources necessary to strengthen their ministries in partnership with churches in North America.
Yes, I'm George Collins. I served since 1981 with ABWE with my wife, Debbie, and our children. We served in Bangladesh for a number of years. And then in the 1990s, we started a ministry called the GAP Ministries, which today is Live Global. My mother came to Christ through visitation ministry. And she had five boys, and she knew we needed something. So one by one, we all came to Christ as she went to church, and it really changed her life, and we saw the evidence of that. My dad never went to a church the entire time I was growing up. So it was interesting growing up in that home. I wanted to be a man like my dad, but I wanted my mom to be pleased with me as well. I tell people the big difference for me, or the big change point, was that there were godly men at the church that became kind of, I say, surrogate spiritual fathers for us. We saw good men that loved Jesus, and we knew, oh, you can be a man and love Jesus too. It was a weird way for a young mind to work, but it worked for us. I say all of that, but later on, before my dad passed away, he did come to Christ, and that was a wonderful time for us as a family. I did end up going to Bible college, a Bible school, but it was because I was impacted by youth ministries and camp ministries, and so I wanted to go and get a Bible education so I could go and be a youth minister or be involved in some, maybe a camp ministry. While I was there, I attended what they called, it was a missions conference there in the college. And I hear stories about, oh, missionaries, be careful, go to the missionary thing, you'll end up in Africa or go this and that. So I went because there were good Bible teachers, and I wanted to hear the Bible teaching. And there was one man who preached, and I'll never forget the message. It was very clear to me at the time, but it really impacted me. And at that point in time, I told the Lord, "Lord, I'm willing to do anything." And it was a scary moment for me because I really meant it. And I had a plan for my life, but if he had something different, I was willing to do that. And sure enough, listened to the Spirit's leading, and he brought a lovely young lady into my life who grew up on the mission field. I learned a lot about being missionary and ended up moving in that direction. It was a discovery over time. It wasn't a one-shot deal. Hey, you go here. It was as I grew in an understanding of what God might want me to do, that's when it became a possibility for me. Debbie went to the mission field when she was 1 year old. Her parents took her there on a Greek freighter, and they went to East Pakistan, which today is Bangladesh. And she loved it. She loved being a missionary kid. She didn't like coming home and being on display at all the churches, but she loved being over there, being with her parents. She had six siblings, so they had plenty of tussling and enjoying each other. And she came to Bible college, and she was pretty serious about life, what she wanted to do, and so on. She was very open about going back and was hoping to go back. And she's just been the love of my life. I'm so thankful for her all these years in marriage, and we have done this together. Everything we've done in this ministry, I was a youth pastor. She was the church secretary. We got married, had a week-long honeymoon, came back, and we were right back in the minute. We've been together 24/7 for a lot of years, many decades, where a lot of people, you know, don't have that kind of intense interaction. Then going to the mission field, the same thing. We were together. And then starting GAP, or the Live Global Ministries, we did that together. So it's been a true partnership all along.
After meeting and marrying, George and Debbie Collins began to sense the Spirit's call to missions. Determined to follow where God was leading, they attended ABWE's candidate class to begin their formal preparation. While they were open to God's leading of where they might serve, the Lord ended up guiding them to a country they hadn't anticipated.
Well, back then, ABWE had candidate classes were a month long. So you would come and you would spend a month, and we had 34, 35 other people in the class. We were on a college campus, and they would bring people in. We had a lot of classes, a lot of things that we were learning, but in the process, in the evenings, they would have somebody come in to present one of the fields. So it's like over that 30-day period, you find out exactly where ABWE is involved all over the world. And the people would come in and make their presentations and their pitch. And every night you're saying, wow, maybe there, maybe there. In the end, in fact, we went saying we're not going to go back where my wife grew up. But at the end of the time, it was obvious that was the place for us to go. So it was Bangladesh. And so our first place was going out there and being a young missionary in the midst of, and for her going back to a place where she grew up, and now she's a missionary. She's a colleague. She's not a little missionary kid. And it was great. For me, I'm born and raised in Michigan, and say I never really had been overseas. You go over there and it's like, my eyes were wide open to a lot of things, but I was absorbing it all. I enjoyed it. I grew to love it. I'm a people person, so if you love people and you want to get engaged and you're a learner, you can go just about any culture and have fun because you can get involved and learn how people engage with one another in those contexts. We began by doing our language training in the capital city. This was hours away from the rest of the missionaries. They wanted all of the new missionaries to learn the language away from the ministry so we wouldn't be involved in any day-to-day they were doing. So we did that. Then we moved to the jungle area, the hospital compound, where we began doing some of our work. And I ended up working primarily among the ethnic minority groups, about a half dozen different groups that were in kind of a restricted access area, but nobody was really involved with them at that point in time. So it was an opportunity for me to take new territory and be engaged in it. We found that our philosophy of ministry was to assist the Christians in their cultures rather than coming in and doing our own thing and having them mimic what we were doing. So our philosophy of ministry was one that said, observe where they're at, assist them in any way we can so they can reach further and deeper for Christ in their cultures. But we had to ask a lot of questions. We wanted to learn from them. And I think that was the number one thing is what do we need to learn before we jump in, feet first or head first and be engaged. As we asked questions, we learned a lot. There was a lot they wanted to share about what they needed and the best way we could help. So as we listened, a ministry philosophy evolved, which was, we just call it national first thinking, is what is it they need? Once we did that, we found that we didn't need to be front and center. We needed to be very much behind the scenes. And when we were behind the scenes and they were the ones that were being championed, it was a game changer. Now, not that anybody else had that idea. I think they all probably hoped that that's the way it would be. But when you began asking questions and truly listened and you followed through and you built trust, it was amazing the things we were able to watch be accomplished through godly leaders that were already in place.
We asked George to share the story behind his vision for GAP, Global Access Partnerships, now known as Live Global. As he tells it, you'll notice he uses both names for the ministry interchangeably, reflecting the ministry's journey through the years. Here's what he had to say.
GAP began when I took a trip to another country. The philosophy was in place. The ministry we were involved in, where we were thinking about nationals first, it was there. But to take it to another step, we had to go to a country that was basically a closed country. The question that people would ask is, are there Christians in other countries? So how can you, if they're not there, how can you have a partnership ministry? I had the opportunity to visit the country of Myanmar or Burma at the time, and it was very much a closed country. And it was during that trip that God showed me some wonderful Christians who were serving there in a very difficult situation. And I watched what they were doing. I just saw the ministry had evolved over a number of years and decades and how they loved the Lord. They were mature Christians. And I simply asked, what can we do to help? And they began to share about potential resources or training or encouragement or prayer support. And I realized then that, wow, if this country, how many countries are like this around the world? Where my thinking was not so much where ABWE was, but where it wasn't. And a vast majority of the world was still wide open to us. It might have been closed to traditional missions, but it was open to us to seek out partners and to serve so we could virtually go anywhere in the world. When I knew it was time for us to leave Bangladesh, that the ministry had been handed over to national leaders, Debbie and I asked ourselves, what do we do next? And about that time, the president of ABWE visited Bangladesh, and I shared with him what we were thinking at the time. He said, when you come back to the States, let's talk and share with me your vision. So when we did go home for furlough, I followed up, met with him, and went out to dinner and shared where I was. And by the way, Live Global was just not even, it was just an idea at that point in time. And I shared my idea. Now you got to understand, when I'm sharing my idea, I'm saying to him, we can do missions differently. Now, ABWE had been around for a long, long time, and they did missions one way, and they did it well. Raise up North Americans, send them to open countries, and let them do the work. I was asking him to reconsider missions in a whole new light for me. And that was go to places where ABWE isn't, going in and finding partners and getting churches involved to support whatever the needs were there. But it's just a whole different way to think missions. And he said, I gotcha. He said, now take your time and figure out, write it up, and whatever you need to do, take your furlough, and at the end, we'll present it to the board. And it was a little bit interesting. It presented it to the board, and I did not think they were going to approve it. But he stepped in, stepped up, and I think he noticed that it might not make it. And he said, gentlemen, ladies, let's give him 3 years. Let's give him an opportunity to try to make this happen. And then they approved it. I will tell people, I said, they never called me back after 3 years, so I guess I'm good. We just kept going. But he stepped in just at the right time so the board would approve this whole concept. Otherwise, you know, it would have just been a dream for ABWE. I think Debbie and I, we were committed enough, we would have left the mission and we would have done it. Because it was one of those things we really felt God put in our hearts. We didn't know why, but it was something that we knew we needed to do with or without ABWE. Very interestingly, there were a couple of new board members that came up to me afterwards saying, this is the most exciting thing we have heard the board means. And one of them is still on the board, and he is one of our most ardent supporters, a champion, just loves the ministry. So it was like, for them, it was like, we just joined and we can't believe ABWE is doing this exciting stuff. So they were all excited about it. I did take Dr. Kempton, Wendell Kempton, to the mission field a few times to see some partners. He loved it. Not only that, he brought people. And some of the people he brought are still supporting the ministry today in significant ways, even though he's gone on to be with the Lord. And we found that if we took people there, they would catch a vision and they would want to participate. And, you know, some of them were church people and the church would do something. Some of them were business people. And, you know, they would jump on board and say, if you need this, we're in. So it was, yes, we took people there and I would tell people, I said, I'm taking you on the trip. Here's the rule. You can ask any question at any time. Because I wanted them to know this was totally above board. I'm not coming to their church and saying one thing and something different's happening on the field. So I had to make sure that everything was correct, that I was representing the partner well and representing the church well. The only way to do that was to take people from the States, let them meet with the partner, and just let it happen without me managing things. So every night, we'd sit together and we'd debrief. What happened today? What was said? What did you learn? How could we do something different? What could I do different, you know, and differently? And so it was a learning experience, but it fostered openness in communication and clarity, and the partners had to be what I said they were. And I already had confidence in those partners when I went to the churches. So it was like, are you kidding me? You get out there and see them, you're going to say, George, you didn't represent them well enough. So it worked that way.
As George and Debbie embraced a nationals first philosophy, focusing on supporting and empowering national believers from behind the scenes, he began to see the value of his approach firsthand. While some churches warmly welcomed the vision, others had questions, as this model differed sharply from the more traditional models of missions with which they were familiar.
When we began talking about this way of ministry with churches, with mission leaders, we've got some kind of mixed reactions. I would say some would say, that's nice, but we sent you there to, you know, get in there and roll your sleeves up and do the dirty work, so to speak. But we found that most churches, when you had an opportunity to share that, listen, you might have sent us here to plant a church, but if we can encourage national leaders and see multiple churches planted in areas where we might not even have personal access to, but they do, it's a game changer for everybody, because the ministry grows and opportunities become available that were never available before. And so we found that the more we were able to explain, we had to learn how to say it as well. What is we learned how to present it, and they were able to observe it, it began to take hold. And many churches and mission leaders and others got behind it, so much so that the president of ABWE adopted the ministry, the board approved it, and all of a sudden we were in a place where, okay, now we've got to come through. You know, we got to take this philosophy that was, in a sense, just started and watch and see what can happen over time.
As the ministry began to take shape, one of the key challenges was finding trusted national partners, especially in countries where traditional missionary access was limited or restricted altogether. In places where the door was closed to outside ministry, George relied not on formal networks, but on something much more personal: word of mouth, interpersonal relationships. Here's how he describes the process of finding and connecting with these faithful leaders.
When GAP started, we were always looking for potential partners. That was before the internet, before cell phones, and so it was word of mouth. So I would ask within the ABWE family, do any of you know of any Christian nationals in your country or in other countries that you might think they need encouragement or support that we could help with this new ministry? And slowly names would come in, and literally for I think 7 or 8 years I was on a plane. I would go anywhere that somebody told me they felt that this is a good potential partner, and it began to grow like that, where I'd find one, and what would happen is I'd find a wonderful partner. Then I'd have to come back to the States, and then I'd travel for a month going to 6 or 8 or 10 or 20 churches, letting them know there's this wonderful partner out there, and we'd love it if you would partner with us to partner with them. And so I would go back and forth. Sometimes I'd have more churches than partners. Other times I'd have more partners than churches. And so it was a lot of fun, I would say that. One thing that's really been impactful for me as we've moved along and lived global is an understanding that God is at work all around the world. When we first started this, the question was, are there Christians in these countries? And many of these places we went, because people hardly knew anything going on in these places. We would go, and God would lead us to some wonderful people doing some incredible things for God's glory in difficult situations. And then we'd go to another country and see the same thing. And what happened over a period of time, it was like all of these pieces of the puzzle you put together, and it was a beautiful mosaic, global mosaic of what God was doing. And it brought me back to, you know, scripture. We're talking, you know, God's word is going to get out, and it's going to happen. And to watch it actually happening in real time globally was amazing. And to come back and be able to share that with churches and say, listen, you know, you wonder what God may or may not be doing in your context. You need to know God's at work around the world. And let me share with you what he's doing in this place and that place. And we found it encouraged the churches because they realized this God that they love is the God of people all around the world in a variety of contexts. And he's doing incredible work. So it helped me understand that God is at work. And through incredible people in incredible ways. And I got a front row seat to watch this unfold and to see our incredible God doing some wonderful things through people that are just so faithful. And it's changed me. It changed me for good. It's changed my life. I wish I had another 40 years to keep going because I love people. I love what God's doing through them. I love traveling in seeing God at work in a variety of contexts. And I just would hope that anybody that's part of Live Global team or is interested in joining would get that same sense and have that same desire to see God at work around the world like that.
After more than 40 years of faithful service and missions, George and Debbie Collins made the decision to step back from full-time ministry. However, their passion for the gospel and commitment to the relationships they've built over decades have never faded. They remain actively engaged with their long-term national partners, continuing to encourage and support them from a distance.
A year or so ago, Deb and I decided it was probably time for us to take a half step back from full time for any number of reasons. Primarily, we felt there was leadership on board really taking it forward, and we were excited about that. But we were also feeling that we've got specific partners we're working with, and we're not going to be creating ourselves new partnerships. So we're going to stay within a number of partnerships that we're working with. And so we've taken a step to go part-time, and we'll do this for the foreseeable future. It helps us to do something very specific, to be available to anybody on the Live Global team that still wants to engage with us or ask questions or ask for our participation. But it also frees up some of our support so that churches can look at younger missionaries and maybe younger Live Global missionaries and put some of the support toward that. It's we never thought we'd come to this place that, okay, now it's time to take a step back. I actually thought I would die with my boots on doing this going forward. And we've got partners coming next week we're going to be with. So we'll stay engaged, but it was time for us to take that half step backwards.
When asked what encouragement he would offer to those considering serving with Live Global, George shared these thoughtful words.
I would encourage new people coming on board by saying that there's still work to do. It hasn't all been accomplished. There are still places that are in need and opportunities for you to be engaged. So even though we talk about all the wonderful things that have happened and the difficult challenges and so on, you need to understand it's just one chapter of an ongoing story. And now it's a new chapter for new people to be involved in writing. And who knows what new things are out there, what opportunities will come along that God will open up doors in new ways for people to be involved. So I would encourage new people coming on board by saying, as I often say, put your hands to the plow. Don't look back, go forward, let God give direction, and you'll be amazed. You'll look back after a few decades and say, I can't believe that God accomplished that and allowed me to be a small part of it.
George and Debbie Collins followed the Lord's leading from the mission field in Bangladesh to the founding of a ministry that now equips national partners across the globe. Though George has stepped back from full-time ministry, he continues to serve in an advisory capacity with the leadership team of Live Global, helping to guide the very ministry he helped establish and championing its vision of partnership-driven missions. George and Debbie's story is a powerful reminder that while our roles may shift with time and with the season of life that we find ourselves in, the call to serve and the opportunity to make Christ known never truly ends, no matter where life takes us. To learn more about Live Global, visit liveglobal.org. Cloud of Witnesses is a production of ABWE. I'm your host, Alex Kochman. Our production director is Grant Boring. Our researcher and interviewer is Lee Nienheis. Production support is provided by Brian Van Timmeren. Additional voiceovers by Jason Younger. Get equipped to make disciples and learn more about how you can reach the nations at abwe.org.
Cloud of Witnesses is a production of ABWE. ABWE is a global family of ministries reaching more than 80 countries by sharing Christ, planting churches, and training Christian leaders. After nearly 100 years, ABWE is continuing to take the gospel to the ends of the earth. You can help us advance the kingdom for the next 100 years and beyond by supporting the mission through the Global Gospel Fund. Learn more at abwe.org/cloud.